Kia ora and welcome to another episode of How to Save the World. My name is Tim Batt.
I'm Waveney.
And we are still doing our record through social distancing and the power of the internet. It's kind of interesting doing it this way, eh, Wave? There's like a little bit of a digital lag thanks to how we connect, but it works.
It's just, yeah, it's good. It's just making us a bit more awkward than we usually are.
So today we're going to do a really cool episode. I've always been interested in and never done any research into how to grow my own food in the backyard in just like a typical house suburban environment in New Zealand. So we thought, because we've just entered the month of May and the seasons are changing, that we'd try and get our arms around how to winter garden. And of course, Waveney is on a farm, is running a farm right now, and has got a lot of experience in this area and has extended her reach into a network of green thumbs as well to get the best advice. So we're going to do an episode on how to winter garden.
Totally. This is episodes especially for you, Tim, actually. It's like,
yay.
I've just thought, well, and to be honest, it's funny that you aligned me with the, you know, more with the expert gardeners than yourself, because I totally actually would more align myself with you. I just have had, like, I garden through networks of people who garden, really, rather than actually garden myself.
Gotcha.
It's something I sort of facilitate. I'm terrible at it. And it's like, I guess I've had this expectation that it shouldn't be something that takes more than 5 minutes a day. So this episode is really for people who think it's a quick thing, don't compost properly, don't particularly love the idea of gardening. And actually, I thought, and I think heaps of people probably like this, that you can put a seedling into an abandoned old garden bed and it will have everything it needs so long as it's got sun and water. It's like, sure, why not? It's a plant, it's chuck it in some ground, and like without any understanding of feeding it, because it turns out that's quite a thing.
Well, okay, great. So this is for me and for people like me and for people like you, Wave, who have those expectations about gardening. So do you first want to get into like why this is important and what this is all about?
Yeah, cool. It's a good question, because I think gardening and sustainability go together so much that we can actually forget to say why, like what's so important about it. It's it's such an important thing, because it's really tied to climate change. For a start, your food and where it comes from is a really big part of our carbon footprint. It's about resilience, so being able to, you know, this COVID thing and realizing how unstable our some of our big supply networks could be, just how vulnerable things are and how good it is to be local and regional and what we can find in our local areas. And it's about, it's not so much about sustainability, but about nutrition and health. The time it takes from food to get from the ground to your plate, which is never going to be less than a few days if you're buying it through supermarkets.
Sure.
I might get some angry supermarket person saying, that's not true, we go to an amazing effort. So sorry if that's not the case in some cases. But, you know, if you garden, you take, and we do this, it's so exciting, you just go out before dinner, grab a few leafy greens or whatever and harvest it, and it can be just a few minutes, but from garden to table. And then there's the physicality.
It sort of works in two ways, because not only is it super fresh, so you've got like the nutrients are kind of right there and they haven't sort of seeded away from the food as it's been taken out of the ground too long, but you also don't have all those processes that you have to go through to ensure something that can be traveling for that long and not wilt.
Yes, actually, because, you know, a lot of the varieties that are chosen are chosen for those reasons, so that they travel well and they last well. And sometimes they're not the varieties that have the most nutrients or that are the best for us. So sometimes those are two different things. So when you're gardening for yourself, you can make different choices. And then also, of course, there's the whole organic thing. And so if you're gardening yourself, you can really know what you've put into the soil, what you're eating. And it's not such sort of a, it's not a blind endeavor of wondering what's been on your food.
Also, I can't believe you didn't bring this one up, because I've been thinking about this one a lot the last week.
What's it going to be? I thought this was a comprehensive list.
Waste. The amount of rubbish that gets created from buying stuff at the supermarket. Because I've had this great control experiment at my house. My two flatmates have gone and joined other bubbles while we've been in lockdown. So it's just been my wife and I. And we're still producing like a surprising amount of rubbish. And I'm like, how in the heck are we filling up these bins? Because it's just the two of us. And it's just food waste. It's just packaging. It's terrible.
That's cool, man, because that's exactly the situation that my husband and I were in 2007, just before we did our rubbish-free year, where we were mindful of it and we were thinking, you know, this, we're sort of across it, and then you just wonder where on earth it's come from. But anyway, yeah. I digress. So nothing worse than a failed attempt. So I thought, let's get into how we garden, how we do it simply, so that we can facilitate success. And like I said, I'm not a gardener, and I have brought in a whole bunch of like some of New Zealand's best gardeners from around the country, and I sent them out, they very graciously all replied, a little Survey Monkey survey with like the most, like I really forced them to choose like what's the number one thing you would do if you only had 5 minutes. So great bunch of people. I'll give them a wee shout out, because it's kind of cool,
please,
for our listeners to know too who they are. Roughly from the north to the south, we've got Sophia Shaw-Colley and Katie Ent, both organic market gardens from Northland and Great Barrier. Judy Keats, Compost Collective. T Rader, our mate, who's already been on the show, from Auckland. Therese Mangos from Pacific Vision Aotearoa. Community garden legend Richard Main from Gardens for Health, and then permaculture gurus Betsy Kettle, Trish Allen, all from the Auckland region. Gardening writer, broadcaster, columnist, and TV presenter Linda Hallinen, and she's from Hanua. Carl Freeman from Farm Next Door in the Naki, Taranaki. Chinese Conservation Trust, Estella Lee. Waimarama Community Garden in Nelson. The team from Organic Edible Garden, Dr. Compost Ben Elms in Central Otago, and shout outs to the Guyton's in Southland, Kate Baxter and the Koanga Institute and Papatuanuku Marae, who may or may not have responded to the survey I sent out, because I forgot to ask people to put their name on it. And of course, surveys are all anonymous. So, but big shout outs to everyone who, yeah, that's right.
I like that it's cool. Anonymous.
Yeah, if anyone sees anything controversial in the garden. And where in the country these guys, because it's important for our listeners, about one third of the respondents were from the subtropical north, two thirds were from the temperate zone, and very relevant for the Aucklanders who might be saying, well, which one are we? Auckland's kind of on the boundary between those two zones. Hamilton's very much in the temperate zone, not the subtropical. So it's why in Auckland you can grow bananas as well as apples, because you're kind of a bit of a mix.
Gotcha.
And as for the kind of the cool mountainous south, to be honest, they pretty much just said, what are you joking? Like gardening in winter? So didn't have a great response from the south. They'll just say, you guys just take this one out. Just have a cup of tea. Okay, so the first question I asked people was just really explicitly stating, okay, guys, I'm starting with nothing, no garden, no plants, no compost, no time, no skill, where should I start? And I actually did a multi-choice. It was the only question I had with a multi-choice. And it was, so have a think, Tim, what you would say. A, do you start with a trip to the garden centre? B, start with composting your food scraps? C, start with preparing a garden bed? Or D, other? Please specify.
Is it a garden bed?
Well, it's not necessarily a right or wrong answer, but you know, my thing that I have always done when I've attempted to garden is just toddle off to the garden centre, which turns out that is not the thing you do. And I also To sort of really round this out, I thought I'm going to ask all of my non-gardening friends. So I actually surveyed them as well for this. And yeah, a couple of people said, yep, go off to the garden centre. Someone said what you just said. Most people said other. And they actually said that they would start by talking to someone that they know who gardens, or Googling it.
That is almost like a take for granted
foregone.
One.
Yeah.
Open up Google.
Actually, side note, I realise I have hardly any friends that don't garden. It was a bit of an eye-opener.
I only
had like five or so people I could ask. So this is what our top gardeners said. Pretty much nobody said start with a trip to the garden centre. So I was like, okay, right, that explains a lot. And there was a real, basically you're starting with composting your food scraps and or preparing a garden bed is kind of the same thing. There were three who said other, and that was all around, like you said, like it's kind of a foregone conclusion. So starting with a bit of research or thinking and planning or connecting with online resources or gardeners. So, yeah.
Is there anything particular about what makes a garden bed a garden bed? We're just talking about a plonk of land where soil is, right? Where you can plant stuff.
No. Like, it's this, and that's such a good question because it's the heart of why I think some people have so-called green fingers and others don't. It's sure, it's a physical space, but it's not just the dirt. You don't just put stuff in the dirt that you've got. You actually have to do stuff. You've got to prepare something, and you've got to kind of make the soil a bit more of an inviting, alive place for a plant.
How do I do that?
Well, I have found in the past with all my wonderful gardening friends that they've got these expectations that a basic thing is to spend an hour a day in the garden or whatever, and they started getting into crop rotation and everything pretty fast. And so I said to these guys, what is the absolute minimum viable product for eating just a few humble veggies as soon as possible out of a garden? And I wanted to know about the amount of time you might have to spend, or your inputs, the cost, equipment, space, that kind of stuff. On one hand, it's like, is it easy or is it not? Because the less time you put into it, the more chance of failure. But the simplest thing, like quite a few people said, just go and grab a packet of seeds and get yourself a container of any type, like an old, preferably not going and buying a new plastic thing, but you might have something, you might have an old bucket lying around or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Even some of the containers we chuck out in the recycling, you can actually use. And then go and get yourself some soil, any old soil from the garden centre, like a bag of potting mix or something like that. That is probably the absolute minimum viable product. But if you've got a bit of earth, even if you've got like a square metre, there's a whole gardening philosophy based around square metre gardening, or actually square foot because it comes from the States. That's really worth checking out. I'll be throwing a whole bunch of stuff into the show notes, but squarefootgardening.org is great. It's totally bulletproof, step by step for beginners.
Awesome.
So that's a pretty cool place to start. But then this was my favorite answer. It's kind of like next level, and it's a DIY version of what you can sort of do to put input into soil to get started. And it's about sheet mulching. Basically, you start with some cardboard, chuck it on the ground, and if there's any weeds underneath that, then the fact that you've blocked them from the light will kill them, and it means you don't need to sort of dig anything out, and you get to use the carbon from that plant, because once it's died, it's just carbon, and you can use that. Carbon's great in the garden, so you kind of get to use it as a resource. So you put the cardboard down, and then you just are grabbing whatever you can. This is why bokashi or worm farming so good, because you can throw that stuff on. But to be honest, you can even just put your food scraps down. Great time of year for autumn leaves, throw them on, throw your lawn clippings on. So you kind of make a bit of a lasagna of organic material, And
it's awesome.
Yeah, and then all you do is you can wait because you can't. You have to wait for that stuff to turn into soil. You know, like the worms and stuff got to do their magic. But actually, if you want to just do it all on the same day, you can just dig a hole through your cardboard, throw in some regular soil, and plant your plant directly in that. And then by the time the roots have grown through that, the rest of what you've done on that sheet mulching should have hopefully turned into some really nice soil, and you'll have some nice nutrients for your plants.
Awesome. I love this. This is so much easier than having to get on my hands and knees and like weed out all of the weeds from the garden.
Yeah, and it's, you know, side note, the recycling market's totally dropped out for cardboard, so may as well use it at home rather than trying to send it off somewhere to be recycled. It's heaps better use for it.
Particularly if there's a bunch of worms and compost going on top of that, that's just going to break down over time in the soil, right?
Yes, yes. It's carbon. It's really, like, this is the stuff that's in our atmosphere causing a huge problem, and that's the stuff that should be in our soil. So it's a really, really great place to put it.
Awesome. Okay, this is cool. I can do this. I'm feeling empowered because I can follow that. I've got a specific bit of my garden in mind, so, like, mentally I'm doing all the steps in the specific bit.
Oh, nice, nice. Yes, that's pre-contemplation. I hope that you get there and put the spade in the ground at some point.
Yeah, I'll show you. Well, I've got to get a spade first. I actually looked for one last weekend because I ran out of jobs around the house. Turns out we don't have one.
I did ask for a broad range of what is the minimum viable product, and I kind of mentioned tools, but the only tool anyone mentioned, they just said, a garden fork could be handy.
Oh, great. Okay, so minimal outlay for tools.
Yeah, I would say a you know what a trowel is? I'm never sure if I say that word right. Yeah, a little trowel would be good, or a spade or whatever. Yeah.
Great. So I guess the next question I have is, like, what should I actually be planting, especially at this time of year? What should I be putting into this this prepared area now?
Well, I did ask, and I made them say if you could only plant two or three things, what would you plant? And the surefire winners is definitely beetroot, and I recall that from when I was a kid. So we had a pretty basic garden, and we managed to grow beetroot all year round. Honestly, Tim, if that's all you even plant, you just can't go wrong.
It's super hearty, in terms of the plant.
Yeah, really. Oh, it's hardy.
Hardy.
And then broad beans are a really good one this time of year too. You can egg, and they've got a nice, big, easy seed that you can just plant straight in the ground. Any leafy greens, a lot of people said leafy greens. And then herbs, like parsley. Herbs and leafy greens are really hard to kill, and they're just incredibly convenient to have too, because you don't sort of tend to want to buy
them. My coriander begs to differ.
Oh, yeah, no, so true. Don't start there. Nightmare. someone suggested garlic chives, which I thought was quite a cool suggestion too, and spring onions. So all nice, easy things. And someone even said, which I love this because it was totally left field, they just said dig some holes for fruit trees.
Awesome.
Yeah,
I guess it takes such a long time that you can kick that off in winter.
Exactly. And then you can start throwing whatever fruit compost in it and stuff, and it'll be nicely broken down. But anyway, so then if you're feeling a bit more confident or patient, I suppose, people suggest, and this is, I personally wouldn't start here if you really were zero, but then you've got to plant what you love. And if you are a patient person and you're not into instant gratification, then carrots, broccoli, cauliflower, heaps of people suggested those, cabbage, beans, celery, garlic.
Do you get a sense of how long it does take, like, say, for carrots, for example, to cultivate some carrots, get them to a point where you can eat them?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I think it's a couple of months. But then winter, think of it as like a, someone called it the refrigerator. Your garden is like your refrigerator over winter. Things really slow down. They basically stop. But if they're there, you can just, they'll just stay there. And then after spring, they can get going and get growing again, or you can harvest all through winter if things are big enough. So winter aside, I think maybe you're looking at, I think it's 2 or 3 months for a carrot. But the thing is,
oh, that's all good.
It's not too bad. Well, maybe, yeah. And but the thing is you've got to start from, you actually have to sow seeds in the ground because carrots do not transplant.
Sorry, what do you mean by that? They don't transplant.
So you can't buy a punnet of seedlings and put them in the ground. You've got to do it. You've got to put the seeds straight in.
Oh, yes. Gotcha.
What was got really interesting with our gun gardeners when I said, okay, guys, what if you could only plant one thing? And they basically all said the same thing.
Can I take a guess?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it silver beet?
Basically, yes. They all said some variety of leafy green, and silver beet is a leafy green. In fact, by name, 4 people chose silver beet as their number one.
That's a real wintry, I've got that association in my head. I may not know anything about gardening, but I do know silver beet couples up with winter.
Yeah, and there's like kale, that was another popular suggestion if you could only grow one thing. Spinach, perpetual spinach, salad green mix, which you can just get a packet of that stuff. There's such a thing called winter lettuce, which are a bit more hardy in winter. And herbs. A lot of people said you can't kill them and they stick around pretty much forever. So just grow some herbs.
Awesome.
Like rosemary, that mm-hmm. sort of stuff. They're so hardy.
Great.
Better than nothing, eh? You're just chucking a rosemary plant in or a thyme plant or something like that.
And I imagine that it makes it a more fertile place for other stuff to grow later. Is that right? It sort of breaks things down, breaks the soil down.
It can be, yeah, totally. Actually, I'm going to throw in my own piece of advice here too. If you're really, this is my motto, if you're a really bad gardener, just grow things that grow like weeds. Like parsley grows like weeds. Fennel actually is a weed. Nasturtiums, they're great. You can eat those things, and why not?
Great. I love that. If you just want to see something happen.
Well, but I mean, why start with the fancy things? Like, if it grows like a weed, but you can eat it, then grow it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's good. That's a great starting point.
Nasturtium flowers are beautiful in salads. Really cool.
Awesome. So, here, can I tell you something that I think about growing foods and growing anything, right? And what?
Yes.
And how this leads on to like what we might need in the home garden. So I know that you need seeds, and I know that the seeds need sunlight and water, and that if you're doing food, generally speaking, you'd use a fertilizer. But I know that you're very anti-fertilizer and...
That's not true.
Inorganic fertilizers.
Yeah, synthetic fertilizers. Yeah.
So did you talk to the gardeners at all about things like natural fertilizers, or I guess compost is how that works? Like, tell me about that bit of it.
I did actually. I couldn't help myself. It's kind of like the special how to save the world question, isn't it? It's just because you're gardening, are you really saving the planet?
Yeah.
Because, you know, this, especially for a beginner gardener or if someone who just wants it instant and easy, you're almost guaranteed to be going and getting single-use plastic with your, you know, your bag of compost or your seedling punnets. And it's plastic that pretty much can't be meaningfully recycled. Mm. So there's that sort of balance, I think. And then there's the, if you're buying commercially non-organic food, there are some very strict regulations there around how much pesticides and herbicides farmers can use. If you're growing yourself at home and you've got no idea, and you can just go and buy all of that same stuff straight off the shelf from the garden centre, you can, and this, I've heard of this before, that you can actually end up with food that is way more toxic than what you would buy off the supermarket because no one's regulating you and you've really got not much idea what you're doing.
Of course, right. So how do we avoid doing it? I don't want to poison myself, Wave. What do I do?
So I did ask our gun gardeners, and it was a cool range of responses. A couple of people were on the end of, look, just start. You don't sort of have this big barrier, which I've experienced myself actually trying to garden zero waste, mm-hmm. which is a nightmare. I don't know if I'd recommend it or not because it's been a huge barrier over the years. So some people just said, look, just start, learn by doing. But most people said, yeah, it really does matter. And the trick is, well, this is cool because I loved it. I loved it when they all said the same thing. I was like, oh, I'm onto something. So pretty much they all said that healthy plants don't really need anything. They don't need sprays. They don't need to have pest control or anything like that. So it's all about having a healthy plant, and it seems like there's a couple of suggestions that were coming up over, or advice that was coming up over and over.
I guess it makes...
One is just to plant the...
That makes perfect sense. Like if you're getting something that's, you know, being planted at the right time of year and it's supposed to be in this place, then it's going to grow. If you have to add a bunch of stuff, it's probably indicative that you shouldn't be growing that thing in that place.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, that's exactly what I was about to say, that there's kind of two main ways to get a healthy plant, and that's one of them. You're picking the right thing at the right time, the right place. And that's thinking about sun and if it's going to be waterlogged. Like some plants love a bit of shade and they enjoy being waterlogged. So just Google it, and I think going back to just if you really are Billy Basic, just starting, just do one thing and get it right. And the other, so that's kind of a bit easier, I think, that one. And the second one is this conceptual shift that we all have to make if we want to have any success in a garden, and that is that plants are healthy if the soil's healthy. And then taking it a bit further, thinking of it as you're not actually really feeding and looking after your plants, but you're feeding and looking after your soil.
Ah, that's nice.
Yeah, and I'm saying this because I've made the transition and it was a bit of an eye-opener, thinking that soil isn't like little dead brown building blocks of sand and clay and long dead leaves, etc., you know. It's that thinking that is the same as like an enormous alien looking down on us and thinking that humans are houses.
Right. We're completely not comprehending the life that's going on inside of the stuff.
Yeah, so soil isn't that, it isn't dead sort of bits of building blocks. Soil is a community of living microbes, and there should be, and we've said this in the soil episode, I really recommend that people go back and listen to that, because we're skipping over it here, but if you want to check out our soil episode and really get into this, there should be more microbes in a handful of soil than there are people on the planet. And each one of those microbes has a specific job. Like, for example, minerals. Sometimes we say, oh, the soil doesn't have this particular mineral. Actually, sometimes it does, but what it doesn't have is the specific microbe that will deliver it to the plant. Microbes do everything. They hold the water that feed the plants. They sequester the carbon. And it's carbon that locks in nitrogen, and it's nitrogen that grows plants. So it all comes down to those little microbes. And as soon as you go, oh, I've got a disease, and you go and spray it with some sort of a side, you know, herbicide, pesticide, fungicide, it kills not just that target problem or pest, but it destroys or attacks the microbe community. And it's very hard to get healthy soil when that's your baseline for gardening, and so you end up with more problems with your plants, and then you sort of get into a bit of a spiral.
Yeah.
So the big question is, how do you get healthy soil?
I'm waiting on bated breath here, because I've got an assumption about this, right?
Well, tell me, what is it?
I reckon it's all about like almost increasing the diversity of stuff that's going in there. So making sure that you've got good compost that's been maturing for a while and got a lot of food scraps in there, and just soil that's got a lot of bits in it, for lack of a better term. Am I warm?
Well, I just think it's the blind leading the blind at this point, because it sounds really good what you've just said. But basically, diversity of stuff that you put in, because it is more or less right, I think, Tim. We go back to that multi-choice question right at the start, where these gardeners are recommending that we start, and that is with the composting and with garden beds. And basically it's two sides of the same coin, because you need to do basically some sort of a sheet mulch, I think, to get going. To do a sheet mulch, I kind of touched on this before, but you need a diversity, going back to your point, of organic material. The most basic thing you could do before you even think about sheet mulching is just to actually dig a trench, and then you put your food scraps in it. That's a lot of people used to garden like that. Like, some people have memories of their grandparents trenching before we kind of got into more fancy, other systems. But trenching is like if we're looking at minimum viable product, that's a great basic thing that you can do. You just dig a trench, and then whenever your compost, your food scrap bin's full in the kitchen, you just walk out, you put it in the trench that you've already pre-dug. When that trench is full, you just cover it over with the soil, and then you dig a new trench, and then I suppose you have to wait a few weeks, and then you're able to start planting into your old trench.
That makes perfect sense. I imagine you'd have like an explosion of life going on if you're just putting food scraps, bunch of organic material in your garden.
So basic. And then, of course, the sheet mulching, which we've already mentioned. And that can just use almost anything lying around. And I reckon your point about diversity is really key. There's this kind of a basic underlying principle with sheet mulching and also with composting, on getting a balance between carbon and nitrogen. And you can just think of it as the nitrogen is the usually wet, usually recently dead, like say an orange peel.
Or is that like fresh yes. grass clippings go in that category as well?
Yep. And then carbon is the long dead stuff, like cardboard or dry crunchy leaves. So you just really look around, and you really don't even have to leave the property to find a whole bunch of stuff. It's May, so autumn leaves, food scraps, cardboard, lawn clippings. If you're getting really excited, you can, and after lockdown, you can go and grab coffee grinds from cafes, go and get seaweed from the beach.
I think you taught me this. A good mnemonic is green stuff and brown stuff.
Totally.
Because it even works for the grass clippings, in that when they're freshly cut, they're like a nitrogen source, but then if they've been sitting around for a while and they go brown, don't they then become a carbon source?
They do. It's like I imagine the nitrogen like some sort of spirit leaving the body.
Nice.
You do have to take it with a grain of salt, because some of the, like coffee, for example, coffee grinds are brown, but they're actually green, they're nitrogen.
Gotcha.
Anyway.
I don't know if you looked into this much with these people, but did you find out much, or do you know yourself much about the kind of, times to plant? And we've talked a little bit about what sort of plants we should be putting into the soil in May, but did you talk about seasonal stuff much with these people?
I did. I thought it would be quite cool to focus on winter gardening, since we're going into winter here in the Southern Hemisphere. And there's some pros and cons, it turns out, like some really obvious ones, like there's a lot of water around, and then a obvious con is that there's not much sun, things don't grow fast. But because of that, there's actually not very many diseases. So in some ways, it's actually a really good time for a beginner gardener to start.
That's cool.
Yeah. And then the only big exception to that would be it's slug and snail season. And I ended up having quite a funny conversation actually with Tureda about that, because I said, I'm so excited. I've just been out last night getting some slugs, with a torch. That's when you go out, by the way. You go out at night with a torch. And it is kind of fun in a macabre way, you're collecting all of these slugs and snails. And then in the morning...
What are you collecting them for?
Well, you're taking them off your plants.
Oh, okay. So you're kind of
so that they don't eat them.
Yeah. Gotcha.
And I said to him, "Oh, so excited because we've just got chickens, and it's the first time that I've been able to take my slugs and snails and then actually feed them to the chickens, and so feeling like it's a good use of them." And I was excited because, like, we both felt really terrible about, like, without chickens, what do you do with them? Like, how do you kill them? And we just sort of didn't really feel like it was these methods that we've employed. They didn't feel very value aligned. It's sort of this awkward thing. You've got these well-intentioned greenies like bashing things to death or drowning them.
God.
I know.
You weren't salting them? Doesn't that kill them?
I haven't done that, but it's quite an interesting question what to do with them. I have to admit that those tiger slug, they are too big for me to bash, and back in the day before I had chickens, and so to be honest, I used to put them on the road. That's awful.
I can see what you're saying about not being particularly value-aligned.
Anyway, it's a horrible thing. So if any listeners got any great suggestions for how you ethically kill your slugs and snails without a chicken, chicken seems like a great solution if you've got them, because it's all cycle of life.
Yeah, that's really good. I don't have chickens, though. I would love to. Maybe this is the good excuse to get chickens, though, because I've wanted to get some chickens for ages.
Yeah, you should. Your backyard's big enough. You don't need much. Have enough chickens so that if you're living in an urban space, you can give eggs to your neighbours and they won't complain.
That's good. They don't cause much of a ruckus, eh, unless you've got a rooster.
Unless you've got a rooster. Some neighbours just get upset because they can cluck quite industriously when they're laying their eggs.
Gotcha.
But in terms of what you can plant this time of year, broad beans are a real winner, and pretty much leafy greens as well, and root vegetables. They'll carry on growing over winter, but just expect things to slow down and maybe not grow too much.
Like us all.
Like, I don't really...
I feel like I'm going a lot slower without the hot temperatures and the sun out.
Oh, actually, look, have we got time for me just to say that this is the first year ever, I'm in my 40s, first year ever I've been looking forward to winter. And I'm like trying to work out why. And I've realised it's because I'm now living on this permaculture farm and having this whole new experience. I've always been urban. And in summer, usually, it's just swanning around. It's on the beach and just enjoying life. And I've just had the most intense 4 months of harvest. It's just like you're exhausted. It's like, oh, when are the plums going to finish? Oh, no, now there's apples. Oh, no, now there's pears. Oh, no. And it's just gone on and on and on. And I'm just really looking forward to winter and just nothing. Slowing down, recovering from a manic harvest.
Well, you're doing it right. You're actually following the natural cycle
I was quite excited to realise it. It feels like a really nice basic thing to just be looking forward to chilling out rather than being sad that I can't hang out at the beach.
Well, this has been really cool to hear that. I don't know, I kind of thought going into this it might be a really stupid time to start growing stuff or start thinking about making a garden at home for this reason, that it's cold and we're going into winter and that. But that has been well and truly dispelled.
Yeah, and this whole starting with green leafy things is totally awesome for me personally, because I love leafy greens, and trying to buy that sort of stuff zero waste is the hardest. You can always go and pick out your carrots without a bag and put them in your own, but very hard to get lettuces or spinach or that sort of stuff in supermarkets without plastic. And it's the stuff that wilts as well. So if you've, and actually with lockdown, it's been amazing because I haven't really needed to go to the supermarket because I can buy things like eggs or potatoes or whatever. Those things will last for a month, no problem. But the leafy greens, they really only last for a few days. So
yeah.
I just think if that's all you've got, I feel like that's like your 80% of the gain. Great place to start.
That's awesome. What else do we need to cover while we're talking about this stuff?
Well, I did ask people for if they could just recommend one thing, what they would recommend. So I can fire through a couple of those, and the rest will be in the show notes. So one of the very cool people I spoke with was Carl Freeman from Farm Next Door. He's a market gardener in Taranaki, and they have got a great website, and they're going to be sharing a lot of inspiration soon is coming, they said, because they farm on just a quarter of an acre, which is, or is it a half acre? But it's not much anyway, and they're making a living out of something that most people just consider a backyard. So they're cool. There's Grow Inspired with Claire Mummery and organicediblegarden.co.nz. So many cool resources. How to Grow Your Own Food is actually a real book published in Hamilton, and so great for the Waikato. And ediblebackyard.co.nz actually have a, this is going back to your question, what to grow in winter by region. They go through the regions, so definitely chuck that in. That's awesome. Cool, eh?
Yeah, that's really useful.
And their best of the rest from around the world, there was the squarefootgardening.org that I mentioned. Really worth, especially if you're a methodical person and you just want to be told what are the steps. It is such a good resource. Elliot Coleman's book, Four Season Harvest, works really well for the South Island because it's written in Maine, USA, so it's similar sort of a climate in some places. And then someone suggested Charles Dowding on YouTube. I hadn't heard of him. He's from UK. Checked him out. Huge following online. Also a market gardener in a really small space. And then one blessed soul just said, don't overthink it. Stuff grows just by seeds. So
love that.
There you go.
Just, that's my kind of
just
person.
Just start.
Whoever sent that in, thank you.
And so that person also said that, and this is me, my goodness, said that Googling can be your friend, but can also be like going down a garden wormhole.
I think this is great that you have managed to find some sites. You've sifted through, I feel like, the search results and found some really useful sites. So, I mean, God, by all means, go do your Googling. But if you can't be bothered trying to sort out the wheat from the chaff online, as it is, just look in the show notes.
It's gold. Yeah, like I've interviewed some of New Zealand's best gardeners, and I've forced them to just choose the one plant and the one resource. So it's really, and it's specific for us here in New Zealand, but if you are listening from overseas, then so much of the stuff's applicable wherever you are. But it's nice for us in New Zealand for a change, isn't it, to have something that's just for us and not have to always turn the seasons upside down mentally in your head. So just closing comment, I said to our gardeners, what is the one thing that you'd most like to say to a keen but isolated, time poor ground zero gardener? So should we finish with that, Tim? Just a few of the things they said.
I feel like they're talking directly to me now, please.
Well, Tim, firstly, lots of encouragement for getting over the no idea what you're doing barrier, which is a genuine barrier. So people just saying, check out, just even Googling, just YouTube videos, webinars, talk to your neighbour who's got a good garden, or your auntie, that's me, Amy, and others. just check out local Facebook groups, and maybe just start again. That was a really common, four people actually said that when I said, what's, you know, your one thing that you'd say, they just start. And then practical advice, only a couple of people actually thought to be practical at this point. I like this one, really good for me because it's something I haven't clocked. Check in with your garden every day.
Now, that doesn't mean that we have to get out there for an hour every day.
No, check it. Like, go, good. Just actually look carefully at it. Do you remember Di Henwood talking about this? He was so, when we had him on ages ago, He talked about mindfulness and about the difference between walking home with his child and just observing things and looking at the trees. And so it's about that. It's just about going, oh, there's a little bug on that plant, or oh, something's eaten it, or oh, it looks like it's fallen over, or whatever. Just checking in every day, not like every week.
I imagine that would be a really nice thing to do, especially if it was like after work, you know, come and see how everything's progressing and just check in with your space.
Find a time. And this time of year, I keep forgetting actually, but in fact, I think I might put a reminder on my phone. It's sort of around 9 o'clock or whatever. Go out with a torch and go find those slugs and snails like fairly regularly. That is something you can grow to love. It's kind of fun.
I had heard that if you put eggshells on top of your plants, that keeps the bugs away, the slugs away rather, because it cuts them.
Yes, I have watched a slug crawl up and over, like their belly rubbed over the sharp edge of a shell. I've watched it happen and I thought, oh, is it going to slice in half? Nothing. But apparently all of that stuff, because these other, oh, and I'll put a link again for some good tips, and like you can have bear traps and shells and gravel, all sorts of things you can put down, and they're more deterrents. And you can also make little attractive houses for slugs and snails, so that all you have to do is like pick up the upside down pot and they're just all in there. So there's lots of quite practical things you can do in that front as well. But I didn't sort of want to overload you with information. And some motivation, a couple of people threw in actually just inspiration, which is a great way to end. And so let's end here. Your rewards will be many times the efforts they've put in.
Love it. Thank you so much, Wave. And thank you very much to all of those people who volunteered their time to help us out with this stuff and give us the expert information that they've gleaned over the years. I'm going to try and grow some stuff in my yard now.
Great. Well, you're very accountable saying that online. So let's see how you go. Oh, because how's the house cleaning? That's still working well for you?
Yeah, it's good. I've been noticing the wash powder that you left at my place, because I've obviously put all my clothes through multiple cycles with it now. It's working really well.
Yeah. Oh, that's really cool. Awesome. Well, there you go. Little baby steps. Hooray.